Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back with DJ Black Caesar, a.k.a. the Landlord of the South.
Keep it live.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. What is a fruit? A fruit is the best. He is constantly training and conditioning himself to meet and overcome all obstacles in his path. His sole purpose is to help to deliver the 17 million or more dead to the Lamb of God, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad. To do this, he is compelled to be obedient, tolerant, militant, courteous, humble, honest, dependable. A fruit is obedient to the laws of Islam and those in authority. His conduct is militant. He is humble and submissive. He is tolerant and understanding. He is courteous and respectful. He is honest in thoughts, deeds, and actions. He is alert and dependable.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to Out on the Front Line of Islam. I'm your host, Brother Jihad Muhammad, tonight, and tonight we have a show lined up for you, and the subject tonight is Black America on Lockdown, Part 3, The Exodus. We will be dealing tonight with the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and also the Constitution of the Nation of Islam, what the Muslims want, point number 4 and point number 5. And God willing, if we have enough time, we want to round it up and end it off dealing with point number 7 and point number 8 of what the Muslims want by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. On behalf of the Nation Building Program, I'm honored to be here. And, of course, we always say in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, and we bear witness that there is no God but Allah. Muhammad is his servant. And on behalf of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, our leader, teacher, and guide, we are honored to be on the air tonight before the Holy Day of Atonement. This is the last show before we go into Charlotte to be with our beloved leader, teacher, and guide for the Holy Day of Atonement. And tonight, let me get started by bringing our guest on tonight. We have with us Brother Maurice Muhammad, Magistrate Court Justice out of Alabama. And we have with us the program director tonight. She's in here tonight, brothers and sisters. Sister Gidget Muhammad, the fireball sister soldier who makes things happen for nation building. Let me go ahead and say, Brother Maurice, are you there?
I am, sir.
How are you, beloved?
I am well by Allah's grace, and assalamu alaikum to you and your listening audience, and, of course, our guests and our panelists, and all of our engineers and our staff. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa
praise
alaikum
be
salam.
To Allah. Sister Gidget Muhammad, Sister Soldier, are you on the line?
Front and center, sir. Yes, sir.
Praise be to Allah. How are you tonight,
family.
Beloved? Wa alaikum salam. How are you tonight?
I am blessed by Allah's grace and always happy and delighted to be amongst family. So I'm ready, Brother Jihad. I'm well.
Well, I want
I
you to
well.
Know, I know sisters, some sisters been wanting to know when we're going to have some sisters on the show. Just be patient with us. Sister Gidget is our first sister guest on the show. We'll be having plenty more on the show, but it wouldn't be befitting if we didn't do it and have her on first. Since she is the program director and she makes it happen for nation building, not just this show, but all the shows that you hear on this network, this sister makes it happen with our brother Rakim. Now, let me go ahead and get started and say, first of all, happy Savior's Day to everyone out there and to our panelists. As you know, we just celebrated the 115th birthday birth anniversary of our messenger Messiah, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, October 7th. I personally had a wonderful day, and I hope you all did as well. And now everybody's fired up and ready to go. To our brother, student reform minister, James Muhammad, who could not be with us tonight. At present, his mother has taken ill. Please keep our brother and his family in our prayers. Just received a text from our brother. He worked so hard for the state of Alabama and the prison ministry.
Oh, yes,
we pray Allah that all goes well. And Brother James, if you are listening, we're here for you, brother. If you need anything, just give me a call, my brother. And Brother Kenneth Muhammad is working as of right now. He's still on the clock. The attorney who was on with us 2 weeks ago, he's still working, and he couldn't be present as well because the client comes first, and I understand. So let me go ahead and get started tonight. We have with us the brain operator of the show, Brother Vernon Muhammad. Brother Vernon, I'm glad you're here tonight. That's my partner in crime right there. He makes it happen for me. Believe it or not, this brother's the one that makes this show pop.
Yes, so, sir, I got your back.
So, you know, I'm glad he's here tonight, and praise be to Allah. Brother Maurice, I want to get started with you. The 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, as it reads to me, it says, the 13th Amendment to the Constitution declared that neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime, whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Formally abolishing slavery in the United States, the 13th Amendment was passed by the Congress on January 31, 1865, and ratified by the states on December 6, 1865. Now, Brother Maurice, if I'm not mistaken, when this bill got passed by President Lincoln, they had just defeated the South in the Civil War, but the South was not represented when he pushed this bill through.
Sure. Yes, sir.
Now, a lot of the governments in the South, they really have a problem with this because they weren't even represented when this bill went through. And I don't think a lot of people realize that.
Right. Yes,
sir. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I guess when we study the backdrop even closer, we'll find that at that point, the southern states had attempted to secede from the Union, period.
Right.
And the whole Civil War was over, not necessarily, and we're under the misconception that it was about freeing slaves and, you know, they just felt honorable to do such, but it was not that. It was about economics. And whenever you hire or whenever you have a corporation, usually your bottom line is going, your top line of liability or expenses is going to be labor. Now, what if you take your top line and make it zero? Now, how much further along would your business be? So I guess when we're looking at the 13th Amendment, I would just like our listeners and as well as our believers to look at it not from a legal perspective, but from an economic perspective.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, so when we sit up here and read where it says that the 13th Amendment to the Constitution declared that neither slavery nor involuntary servitude,
right,
except as a punishment for crime,
sure,
whereof the party shall have been duly convicted,
sure,
shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Can you elaborate just a little bit further about this law that is concerning black people here?
Well, you know, we look at it from a perspective that when they are saying involuntary and they're saying except for duly convicted, every crime in the state of Alabama, the state of Georgia, wherever you may be, even on a federal level, has a term of servitude that a person is subjected to serve if they violate that particular aspect. So what we're saying is, especially when we and even now today, when we fill out applications, there is a term on there called crimes of moral turpitude. And that word simply means moral inconsistencies or something to that effect. If you're convicted, then this is the punishment. So the point is, get them convicted. And then
right.
we can determine the time at that point. You're never sentenced to time. You're always sentenced to a term of labor, a term of labor. Why do we look at that and say a term of labor? When you look at the average age of those who are being convicted, black, white, and green, the average age is between the ages of 19 and 34.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those are the ages where men and women are at their peaks, at their learning peaks, at their performing peaks, at their mental peaks in some instances, in terms of being able to perform a task or a duty. When you start getting over 35, when we were a little younger, we could do a little running and something like that, and we don't ache as much. But now we've hit 40, 35, and so on. Now we've got a couple of little dings and nicks and got to take a little Advil. So what they're looking at is when can we maximize their service to us? And they looked at that and said, look, we will take the people, and if we can convict them, then they will serve. So they're being convicted at 19 and 20 and 25. They say we're going to take them in the prime of their life and then give them terms of 10 and 12 years so that you have to work for us for free, because our country, it was simply built, and I don't think it's a secret anymore, on slave labor. So once you said that slavery is abolished, then we got to get the closest thing to slavery, and now that is a convict.
Now this also can apply to a child if they say that the child is to be tried as an adult. Is that correct?
That is, yes, sir. Because
okay.
what is happening now, what the child is exhibited, he's exhibited that he's lost his child innocence or his childlike behavior. I mean, if you got a child killing and murdering and stealing and robbing, then he's not a child anymore. He has a mind now of an adult criminal in their mind. But definitely doesn't have the maturity, definitely doesn't have the wherewithal to make those decisions.
Okay.
And so then we find our children used and abused in the system.
Okay. You're out on the front lines with the Fruit of Islam. We're talking about the 13th Amendment at this point, Black America on lockdown, and then we're going to go into the Exodus. But I want to continue on with this lockdown, Brother Maurice. I want to get back to you with this point here. Now, there seems to be no let up. Because once a black person is convicted of a crime, they have the jacket title of felony.
Yes, sir.
Now, what does this do to the black man or woman who gets tied with this jacket of felony now? How can they what does it do to their status as far as being an American goes?
Well, to their status, it cripples. It really does. Especially if you are attempting to fit in or assimilate to the system. If you're trying to get a benefit from the system, then they're saying that you violated systematic rules and that this person won't be eligible or we won't allow this person to come into this system without a thorough investigation. And in most cases, they call it fitness. Are you fit to be in our environment? And so there are procedures that a person could go about to retain and receive again their rights.
There is?
Yes.
Okay. How does that apply?
Well, that process is called expungement. And you can be granted an expungement by your governor, or depending on the magnitude of your crime, they will say that certain crimes do not take away certain rights that you have. Like some brothers who have been convicted of felons, have their voters' rights have been restored. Their right to bear arms in some instances, very, very, very few instances, will be restored. But sometimes they will actually restore those rights to you. And that's the right to bear arms and other constitutional rights. So there are some processes, and it's a very, very straight gate. It's not a lot of people, and they're not going to publicize it. At one time, President Bush at the time had passed or introduced a bill called the Second Chance Law. And this is when we saw a lot of the corporate heads, and I think Martha Stewart had even been convicted. And a lot of this, at that time, a person who was convicted of a felony could not even head a nonprofit organization.
Okay.
But after that particular ruling came through, I don't think it ever passed, but they took little caveats of the ruling and applied it to certain laws. So now they've used that point, because what we saw an influx of whites and business owners being convicted. So they had to ease it up for an economic purpose.
Okay. Now, I've gotten plenty of calls on a question that you had asked Attorney Kenneth Muhammad last time we were on the air about the law. I think it was called, is it called culpability?
Culpability, yeah.
Culpability, right? I got plenty of calls on that. Can you please elaborate real quick, because we're dealing with convictions now. We're dealing with persons with felonies now. How does the law of culpability apply?
Well, Brother Jihad, those particular aspects are not federal. So you can't really say that it's a blanket rule. You have to go to it's really a state-by-state ruling. You know, some states
are different. Okay.
Yeah, each state is very different in that order, because some states won't grant you certain reciprocities on certain laws because it may affect their economics in a different perspective. So what we have to do is really study our state codes, our state laws, and see which one are more comparable to that particular law in your state. And then you will know where you can move and where you cannot move.
Okay.
And how to move. Yes, sir.
Okay. Now,
so I don't want to necessarily answer the question and then the information not pertain to your state.
I understand.
Yes, sir.
Now, okay, let's say can this apply this way? How about on the federal level? Say if I'm out and I put flyers in people's mailboxes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a federal offense, right?
Not necessarily, no.
Not necessarily a federal
offense. No, if you mail them, and see what a federal offense does, anytime a situation crosses the state line, if you say, for instance, you're mailing, and you mailed me something in Alabama from Tennessee, now which state would prosecute you? That's why they have federal laws. Did we violate a certain federal law? Did we violate this federal law? Now, if you have certain crimes that are prosecutable on both the state as well as the federal, once the federal has established their case.
Okay. So, in other words, so if I'm going down the street just putting flyers in people's mailboxes, is that a blanket law, federal, or that's all depending upon the state?
That will probably be a state. Matter of fact, I would even venture to say that would even be more local.
Okay.
That would be more municipal court law and based on an ordinance than a statute. And an ordinance is a city law, and a statute is a state law.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, getting back to the law of culpability again,
mm-hmm.
I'm a felon. I'm a convicted mm-hmm. felon. I'm hanging out with some boys or whatever, and somebody's strapped with a piece on. And
mm-hmm.
he doesn't have a right to have a piece on, but we hanging out together. How does
right.
that law of culpability apply?
Well, that crime, everyone involved, everyone present could be charged with that crime. And that culpability is that means that we were all together in the commission. We might not have been. You only had one trigger man. But before we had a trigger man, we had the man who drove. Now, who's more important than the crime? The person who brought you there. Of course, the person who did the actual shooting is very important. But if the person who brought him there wouldn't have brought him there, then we wouldn't have had a shooting. So they say, well, all of you are involved in this situation.
That's
all
a
of you have
crime.
Yes, because now you are party to a particular crime. So now we have to see, rather than saying, now what part did you take? What part did you take? Now what we'll do is we'll prosecute all of you together.
Okay.
And then see from the group which one, and usually what happens is the defense attorney will ask that his client be tried separately and just try him and isolate his crimes based on what you think and what the evidence presents.
Okay. Now, and they should do that, or they don't have to do that?
They don't have to do it. They can do it, but they don't have to do it. It all depends on how the information is deciphered by the investigation. It all depends on what evidence is presented.
Okay. So now, coming back around to the purpose for slavery, was about money.
Mm-hmm.
It's about wealth.
Sure.
It was
about wealth. It was about attaining wealth.
Right. So now here we can use the laws to take a people now and put them back in slavery, working in the prison system, and we can use these laws if we want to put a net over a community or a nation of people to get them back into servitude. Is that correct?
You can, but what you have to do, and I really want our listeners to understand that the way the law is set up is a kind of throw the rock and hide your hand.
Right.
Type of situation, because what they're saying is, look, here's the scenario. You have depleted education, depleted employment. You have depleted ways of making a stream of income, and then from some way or another, it's presented an opportunity for an illegal activity to take place, and you can make money. So if it's between doing something illegal and feeding your family or your family being starved, the average person is going to take the first road. They're going to feed their family and then suffer the consequences later. But what happens in our instance, it is made prevalent to do that. It is made the priority to do the illegal activity before you even explore the legal opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And so now what is happening now, what they do is they take the laws and play it against the citizens, the actual people, and it's almost an environment of entrapment where you basically entrap the people and say, these are your parameters to work in, but A, B, and C are all illegal, and you don't know a D.
Mm-hmm.
So now what we'll do is now take the best of the three evils, or the easier or the more prevalent of the three evils.
Okay. Now I'm convicted. I have this
conviction.
Now, I hear, and you haven't said this, but I hear that expungement in a lot of cases is a difficult thing to get. That's not something that's automatically volunteered.
No, and it's
correct?
Something that is definitely, because the worst thing to do is to empower a disenfranchised group of people with votes, because at that point it can be translated to economic power if they understand. If you take a third of your population and eliminate them from the process, then you have another third that may not even participate. So you're trying to win a race with 33% at maximum, 33% maximum of your manpower.
Okay.
Maximum. So now you're going against another group of people who are saying, we're going to take 100% of our people and beat 33% of your people. And it happens every day. Because when we go in the community to register our young brothers to vote, and we got a major election coming up, because I know the presidential election is very important, but most elections that really affect the everyday person are the local election.
That's right.
Are your local judges? Are your county judges? Are people that will actually affect the laws and enforce the laws in your area? And you have no input to that. Because when we look at the voting pool, we have 33% that are not interested because they don't think that it has any bearing on it. Then you have 33% that is totally ineligible. They are interested but can't join in.
Mm-hmm.
So we're attempting to win an election off the top with 33% of the vote.
Wow.
Maximum. So now the election appears to be an uphill journey because we're moving on an upscale base. We're moving on a base of upscale, up that hill, rather than pushing the rock down the hill, we're trying to push it up the hill. And usually what happens, it begins to roll down.
Wow. Well, it sounds like once they get you in the system, you got some work to do to try to get from underneath it.
Of course. Because
and with the long prison sentences that they give you,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, first you got to get out. I mean, the difficult thing is to get through the sentence and then try to get it expunged if you can. But
right.
A lot of times, especially here in the South, they give you long prison sentences right off the gate.
Right, so they can put you on the chain gang.
Absolutely.
And let you make, as my grandmother used to say, let you make big rocks smaller rocks.
See.
And so the more you have in prison and the fewer you have in college, it creates a new cycle. Because, see, they're, and it's not a happenstance. See, this technology is based on knowledge that is presented by the young man's third-grade test scores. That's why they come into our communities with these standardized tests. So they can say, how many prisons we need to build? We need to build them at a rate of this, that, and the other, because if this young man cannot read on a third grade level and or a second grade level in the third grade, then more than likely he's going to fall way behind in the learning process. So it's like any good Major League Baseball team, you build your farm club. So our schools in some instances become breeding grounds for prisons. Because what happens is if we don't properly fund the schools and we don't have a proper curriculum in the school, then what that does, it actually dissipates the learning process. And then by the time the young man is in the eighth grade, he's totally disinterested in learning. Totally. So now what can a man do in America with an eighth grade education? In a technical world.
Right.
Very little, if not much. So what happens is at that point, then they begin to go in other directions and alternative lifestyles and alternative ways of making money. And in most cases, those alternative ways are illegal.
Right.
And so the sentencing guidelines, if you notice, you get 10 years for crack cocaine and probation and rehab for powder cocaine.
Our subject tonight. Yes, sir. Go ahead, Brother Maurice.
Go ahead, then, brother.
Our subject tonight is Black America on Lockdown. This is part three, the Exodus. Brother Maurice, go right ahead.
And what I was about to say as I was finishing up that statement, when those young men are on probation, And they get those sentences, and you get the young man that's selling crack, and it's his first time. It's his first offense. Most times he's not granted deferred prosecution. And basically what deferred prosecution is to say, hey, you've been arrested for this. We'll give you an opportunity, because you're not a bad dude. We'll give you an opportunity to get rehabbed. We'll give you an opportunity to get your education. We'll even give you an opportunity to get your job. You work that for a year and report back to us. If you don't have any more infractions with the law, any more run-ins, we will simply throw everything out. Now, how many times is that offered to a young black man without an education? And what happens is our young people are sentenced to responsibility. So you tell them, say, get a job. Okay, I don't want one. Go back to school. Don't want to do that. And don't smoke anymore, because we're going to test you. And you come back 1 year later with no job, not even enrolled in the class. And then when you take your test, you spot. And now you're being found using. Now, what alternative does the judge have other than to enforce what he said he was going to enforce? And see, this is a trend.
Can I make a comment You know, Brother Maurice, I'm listening to what you're saying. And, you know, I have long worked this juvenile probation system. And just thinking back on some cases that I've actually been involved in and some children I've been involved with, and you're kind of painting a picture for us, whether you realize it or not. And it seems to me that all of these structures that have been put in place have been specifically designed for failure of the black race in particularly. I mean, because if you look at the substandard education that we have, and if you look at from generation to generation, how when we became integrated with another class of people, you know who I'm talking about. I don't like to make generalities, but when we started unsegregating our schools and started integrating, then there still was an offer of a substandard education to the black man and woman in America. And however, I think I've had this on my show before, where they start creating these criminal records now for children as early as middle school, because they start handing out these tickets and citations and things of that nature. So to just go back to what you were saying, is it more feasible in this day and in this time to start looking at alternative educational components, whereas some parents who are currently homeschooling will actually begin homeschooling more than just their own particular children? Because when we're in a chaotic environment and in an environment that is designed to make us fail, it's almost like they have no choice. And when you're coming from a generation of people that were also exposed to the same substandard education and the same system, there seems to be no break in that cycle. So would you say that that is a feasible option for us as a people to really start looking at as far as educating our children?
Well, I would say that, Sister Gidget, but on the same token, what I would say we need more of, we need more of alternative environment education. Because what I mean by that is because we can homeschool our children and the children in our community, but when they get ready to go to the park, who are they dealing with? When they get ready to go to the mall, it's not the homeschool children they're going to have a problem with. It's going to be children who don't the social aspect of what they're doing will be challenged. So it's like if we teach ours well, then we have to take the responsibility of teaching the masses. And see, this is where we are today. And this is why I think our ministries, the nine ministries, are going to be so valuable, because we cannot teach everyone on Sunday. We got to be doing something all the time. We have to be doing something every day, all the time, in every aspect of it. It's not just justice. It's not just education, because justice and education is supported and verified by entertainment, and it is supported by our commerce. It is then undergirded by information. It is then placed and understood by even our agriculture. So now all of those ministries are not intertwined,
right?
But working on one subject. You know, working on one subject.
Hold on to that, brother, because you're getting ahead of where I'm trying to go first.
I want to finish my lockdown. Yes, sir.
Well, we're not on lockdown.
Yeah, y'all going to have to slowly roll now. Hold on. Let Brother Hamlin. Brother Hamlin.
Yes, sir.
I want to make sure we finish the lockdown. I want to paint a picture, a clear.
Sure.
See, because this is where I'm going, Brother Maurice and Sister Gidget. Many of our people refuse to understand that you only have one way out of this.
Right.
And so I want to paint the picture to show black America just where we are. Because some people, because to some people, brother, until it happens to you, we don't really give a darn.
Right, right.
See, but when your child gets locked down and gone for 25 years of his life, now all of a sudden you care.
Now you're an advocate. You're an advocate now.
Now you're an advocate now. See,
and
so,
let me say this, Brother Jihad.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. With that, it also it goes even beyond educational line.
Absolutely.
Because in Alabama, at one time, and I wrote the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and informed him that at one time in the state of Alabama, there were over 30 political figures and pastors at one in like a 6-month period that had been indicted on crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not just those young men who are hanging on the block. It's not the young men that are slinging. It's not the young boys who are bringing guns and pills and bad chicks. It's not just that. It is to, they are actually after the mindset and the headset of our community, because if you break down the heads and if you instill enough fear in the heads, then you can lock the body down.
Right.
Now, and lock down. Yes, sir.
No, sir. I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
No, go ahead, dear brother.
No, I was just going to ask if anybody on the line had a question pertaining to where we are right now in this conversation. Brother Vernon, does anybody out there want to ask a question right now? Sister Gidget, even, I'm sorry. Sister
Gidget.
We have
a few callers who are on the line, but no one has their hand raised, so they're just enjoying the show.
Okay.
Callers, if you
want
to join the conversation, just press 1 on your phone, and I will bring you in if you have a question or comment.
Right, because I want to go right ahead. Go ahead, dear brother Maurice. I just want to keep on this line right quick before we move on into the Exodus.
Yes, sir.
Yes,
and you know, the actual aspect of being locked down, of course, they are going to attempt to lock us down. And, you know, it is all said that the little boy asked the question, Daddy, why does the lion always die at the end of the story? And Daddy,
Brother Maurice, your phone is becoming distorted.
Oh, is it? I'm sorry.
Going in and out. Uh-huh.
Can you hear me better?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I was saying that in a lot of cases, you know, the question is asked, you know, Daddy, why does the lion die at the end of the story? And the dad replied, Son, because the lion is not writing the story. See, when we begin to write our history and begin to determine for ourselves what our future is going to be, I think that is a responsible person. But as long as they can utilize free labor, which was the breaking point and the forging ahead of the Industrial Revolution and the technology revolution, then they will always have a head start on what we're doing. You're dealing with people who have been making money in profit for 300 and 400 years.
Right.
So they built it on a system. So the system apparently is working for them, and they don't care about the 3/5 chattel slave that they once called us. And if we look at our statistics today, the black man makes an average of 60% of what the average white man makes. So if you did that mathematically and you said 60 over 100, what you would come out with was 3/5.
Now, here's the origin of what you're talking about. The 13th Amendment was passed at the end of the Civil War, before the Southern states had been restored to the Union and should have easily passed the Congress, although the Senate passed it in April 1864. So, in actuality, the South didn't even get a chance to have a yay or nay vote in this affair.
Right, because they had processed themselves out of the affairs of the Union. So they didn't care about what was happening. And so, or they did care, but they wanted to restore and keep the labor moving and free labor. They wanted to keep the black man a slave so that they can continue to do the manufacturing. They wanted to continue to do the farm work. They wanted us to continue to do all of what we were doing for free. So when the union began to talk about if you did that, then basically the fruit would spoil in the field. It would have such a high supply now because you can produce it readily until we wouldn't be able to compete on any type of international basis. And please remember that international income and international economics was alive and well even in the 1800s because we were still trading with other countries and other nations, and that's how we got footholds into those countries and other nations. So it was purely economic. The justice system was basically the enforcement of keeping an economic slave.
Okay.
And like it still is today.
Yes, ma'am. Sister Diddy,
you know, I just want to say this. You know, there's a re-education needed here.
Yes.
Because even as we teach our children about our own history, well, how are we going to teach them something that half of us don't even know?
Right.
So you want to teach your children that, yeah, we as a people came here and we were slaves and we got set free and Lincoln is a hero, and then we had to sit on the back of the bus and now Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks are heroes. But nobody teaches their children how they actually became enslaved mentally, and no one addresses the issues of the mental health of the black man and woman in this nation, because that mentality is passed on from generation to generation to our generation to my children, your grandchildren. That information is passed on, but the re-education from what Willie Lynch did to us to enslave our minds has never been addressed. It has never been addressed. We don't address it in school. You know, we don't address it at home because half of us don't even know it or understand it. There's a re-education here that needs to take place in order for a condition of a people to change. So when we talk about, you know, the economics of America, you have to know that we are still in servitude to this nation as long as we are still asking white people for jobs, as long as we are still involving ourselves in criminal activity that gets us locked up so that we can continue to do free labor now. I mean, it's all a game. And if nobody is teaching the game, then you're going to constantly lose.
Well, I like to.
So there's a re-education that needs to take place here.
Sure.
Now, I like to, I'm going to keep this thing going forward this way and say I agree to one extent, but to another extent it's being addressed, because what Master Farad Muhammad studied for 42 years to give us was actually to combat and destroy the Willie Lynch and the psychological enslavement that our people suffer. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
I don't agree with you, Brother Jahab. Hold on.
I have to finish my statement before you comment. I have to finish my statement because I may even answer it before you.
Okay.
What the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was the first to go there and receive that knowledge. And so his mind was the first to be free. That's why we call him the first begotten of the dead. See, so we have a teaching that can destroy and break the psychological change, but most of us don't know, because they say, how can they know unless they have a teacher? And how can they have a teacher unless he be sent? This is what the war is that the Honorable Louis Farrakhan is fighting on a consistent basis every day.
Right, and all I'm saying is that we see Minister Farrakhan taking the fruit to the streets, and that process right there is the beginning. However, we cannot turn a blind eye to how slavery has also taken our minds and divided us by faith, because just as many people that are receptive to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and to the fruit of Islam, there are still those that are locked in to the Christianity mindset, who, when you hear Muslim, when you hear Islam, when you hear mosque, there's a negative vibe that goes throughout our community. And so until we reach across the aisle to get those people, because these are our brothers that we live with shoulder to shoulder, until we're able to reach across the aisle and say, hey, Pastor so-and-so, hey, I need you to get the deacon board, the boys in the choir, and whoever else, and get out here with us, the FOI, and come get our people. Because you still have that negativity about Islam in the black community, because we don't have to talk about the impact of the church in the black community.
Okay. All right. Let me ask Brother Vernon, is there any questions on the line? We're talking about Black America on Lockdown, Part 3, the Exodus. Brother Vernon, do we got any questions on the line so far?
We actually do have one hand raised.
Yes, sir.
There's a caller from 314-475.
You're out on the front line with the FOI tonight. Yes, who are we talking to?
It's Brother Gene. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, soldier.
Wa alaikum salam, sir.
How are you? How's everybody doing?
Everybody's fine, beloved.
Okay,
what question or statement do you have for us tonight, Brother Gene?
Well, first of all, I just want to say, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I witness there is no God but Allah, who came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad. And that's second prayer of divine. Okay. Sister Gidget?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I just wanted to comment on what you're seeing for the negativity that you get amongst Christianity. And I agree with you 100%. Is that the psychic trauma that has been done to our people. But I just want to share with you experiences that I have. I'll soldier in the final call. I run into a lot of Christians who say, you know, I praise Jesus. And, you know, it's up to us and it's upon us as Muslims and who has been blessed with the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to plant a seed in their minds, something to make them think. To plant a seed in their minds, it can be a word or a few words. Just plant the seed in their minds that, you know, who we are, because a lot of them has been really, really miseducated on Islam. And sometimes when I'm out there, sometimes when I'm out there soldiering, before even introducing the final call, I ask them, do you know what we're about? They say yes, and I let them give their statement, and just to see where their mind is, and then I correct them on it. And I tell them, you know, they think the final call is a Muslim newspaper. I tell them, no, it's about you and I, you know. And it's just up to us and who has been blessed with the teachings to just plant the seed in the minds of them. And then many have called, but only a few have chosen. But I think there's something taking place in the atmosphere, and there's something deep taking place where the minds are going to, they're going to be coming, trying to knock down the doors of Muhammad Mosque all over the country real soon.
Sure.
And I just wanted to make that statement.
Beautiful.
Yes, sir, absolutely, Brother Gene, and I thank you for that comment, and I totally agree with you. And, you know, just know that it's going to be a process,
absolutely.
You know, but it's going to take time, but like you said, we have to plant those seeds, and that's the thing. We have to know what seeds to plant in our people, because when the psyche has been affected, then sometimes we have to know what was done in order to undo it, was my point.
Yes,
thank you, sir. Thank you so much for calling in.
Both of you had beautiful. Yes, who's that? Brother James?
This is Brother Maurice.
Yes, sir. But brother, sister,
yes, sir.
That was a beautiful comment. Thank you, Brother Gene, for your comment, sir. Go ahead, Brother Maurice.
Yes, sir. Brother Gene mentioned something. He said that, you know, in our conversation, that our people want, if we can instill or plant a seed, either by word or a phrase or something. But you know, our people are awakened by what they see. Our people are awakened by not necessarily so much of the word of what we say, but the action of how we live what we say we live.
Beautiful.
See, sometimes to us and our people, we are the only Quran that they will ever read. So when we are that only Quran that they will read, then we have to be a stellar example, and not necessarily saying that we have to be perfect, but we have to be taught implementing what we have learned, even to the point of dealing with our people's, as the messenger said, our people's ignorance. Not that they intentionally want to not know, but they trust that person that gave them that information. See, when 9/11 hit, anti-Islamic statues began to come in, and they began to have a lot of rhetoric and a lot of propaganda about Islam. So it planted negative seeds in people's minds. But when Timothy McVeigh blew up the building in Tulsa, you didn't hear any anti-Catholic rhetoric coming out. You didn't hear anything about Catholics being terrorists. You didn't see. We didn't even know that McVeigh was a Catholic until later on down the line. But when it first hit, everybody thought the Muslims did it because that was the line that went out. But what happens when we're in the community and we see those brothers, and when we're out on the street and the boots are on the ground, and we can see and the people can feel us cleaning up our community?
Right.
Then they will have a different mindset, because what happens, the messenger told us that if we handle our people properly, they'll come in. He even gave us a little book to study. And I think it was Dale Carnegie's The Proper Handling of People, but in how to influence people. But it was something that he thought was good for us that we should learn and master, because at a certain point, our people's ignorance or our love and our example should override our people's ignorance. And so when they see us moving, they just join in because, hey, these are the men that I need to follow. I don't know nothing about them, but they come in here to take care of some business. I want to be on that end. So not only in there, not only in the streets, but now on a business level, in the justice, in the defense. I'm saying if these ministries, if we execute these ministries properly, then we can get all of our people. We can get all of our people right where they are. We can get them in the church because, see, it is not Christianity that our people are caught up in. It's white supremacy that they're caught up in. Or more so, not even white supremacy, it's black inferiority that they're caught up
in. Come on.
So they don't have a proper knowledge of self, so they teach and they strive based on what they think is good for us. And then when they say black man in control, oh, no, we ain't going to be in control long. We're going to turn to say, oh, my God, black man can't be in power, because we feel like we're inferior because that's the way that we have been taught. So we will volunteer and we'll take our children to prisons rather than take them to college campuses, because in our mind, we're scaring them straight. You don't see white children going to prison. You see them going on Saturday morning to their parents' alma maters, and they know the fight song, and they know this. So in their minds, if they don't get into the University of Alabama, they're a failure. But in our minds, if we can just go to junior college and just graduate, we've done good. But in their minds, if they don't take over that family business and take it further, see, what we have to do now is raise the bar on what we expect even of ourselves.
Right.
Because no one rises to low expectations. So what we've done is set out low expectations for ourselves, first of all for self, and then for our community. And then if
we're
we see
out on
one,
the front line with the fruit of Islam with Brother Maurice Muhammad, Magistrate Court Justice in the state of Alabama, and our sister Program Director of Nation Building, Sister Gidget Muhammad tonight. And
Sister Gidget, make
tonight,
it happen, Muhammad.
Yes. our subject tonight is Black America on Lockdown. This is part three of the series, and it's also the Exodus. Let me go here, Brother Maurice and Sister Gidget. Let's get right into it. I want to give a personal thanks to the Nation of Islam, NOI, Final Call Prayer Line, Call Prayer Line, that goes on every morning. I listen to this show in the morning. A lot of times, sometimes I can't catch it because I'm in a bad area that early in the morning at 6 o'clock. But for the most part, since the prayer line has been on, it's been on for a few years now, every morning on this prayer line ran by the host, Captain Emeritus Curtis Muhammad and Brother Wali Muhammad out of Chicago, they do the constitutional reading. They'll have a sister and a brother get on the line, and they will go through word for word reciting the Muslim program, what the Muslims want and what the Muslims believe. Now, I'm on the line at 6 o'clock in the morning. They come on about 10 after 6, and Brother Curtis will introduce the person that's going to do the reading. Well, I've heard it so much throughout the course of the years now, I've heard this so much that it started taking root. I said, wait a minute. Wait, this just ain't no writing here. And it began to take root, and that's why we came up with the subject on this line about Black America on lockdown and the Constitution that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad wrote. Listen to the words to the Constitution that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad writes. He writes on what the Muslims want. Point number 4. We want our people in America whose parents or grandparents were descendants from slaves to be allowed to establish a separate state or territory of their own, either on this continent or elsewhere. We believe that our former slave masters are obligated to provide such land and that the area must be fertile and minerally rich. We believe that our former slave masters are obligated to maintain and supply our needs in this separate territory for the next 20 to 25 years until we are able to produce and supply our own needs. Since we cannot get along with them in peace and equality after giving them 400 years of our sweat and blood and receiving in return some of the worst treatment human beings have ever experienced, we believe our contributions to this land and the suffering forced upon us by white America justifies our demand for complete separation in a state or territory of our own. Now, let me tell you what jumped out at me. Territory, defined in English dictionaries, is talking about a mass of land under a jurisdiction of a king or a sovereign ruler, or any mass of land can be considered a territory. Puerto Rico is a territory.
Yes.
St. Thomas, Virgin Islands, it's a territory. Most of the black communities where we live in segregated living in America can be considered territories. Hell, we are already separated.
Sure.
So when on the prayer line, as they kept going over these words, the meaning of this began to jump out at me now. So I called Brother Maurice up, and I called Brother Kenneth, because the messenger now is phrasing the argument. Is everyone still there?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
It's phrasing the argument now. See, for us now to take and build a separate state and territory, and we almost got it right there. But let me ask the question. I'm not going to go into answering all this myself. Brother Maurice, Sister Gidget,
yes, sir.
How is this possible? Point number 4, in your own words, how can this become a reality?
My answer is going to be short because my phone might hang up. You know,
oh, that's right. It's almost 10 o'clock on my time.
Yeah, you know, I got my FBI or hourly call. But if it does, I'll finish it. So I would just say, you know, I'm just going to say this the way I say it. You know, we really fail to invest in ourselves. And I know you and I had a conversation this evening, Brother Jihad, about freedom. And as long as we go on to the white man to get money, then we're not free. Mm-hmm. So we will buy Cadillacs, Mercedes-Benz, $400 tennis shoes, whatever, but we will not invest in ourselves.
That's her phone. Brother Maurice, are you still there?
Yes, sir, I'm still here. She
yeah,
said
her,
we will not,
she'll
we
be back. This happens to
we
her
We will
every
not
hour.
Invest in ourselves. We will not invest in ourselves. We would invest into an America that's falling based on what we have actually exhibited in our activity. You know, when others want to raise money, they put some in our community. When Asians want to raise money, they bring out a new weave. And we fight the Asians over, is this number four? You know, I got number five here, and this needs to be number three and number two. And so they know that because we don't have a thorough knowledge of self. See, one of the things that the messenger is saying, that in the territory, we need to be running that territory.
Right.
We need to be in a state of mind where we can depend on our brothers and ourselves and Allah mostly to give us the wisdom, and we have the knowledge. We have fields of endeavor in every field known to man. But will we simply pool our resources so that we can develop ourselves and develop a territory? So we're very lucky and fortunate to have a street that we control. Most of our mosques and study groups have to, you know, we're in and out of places because we don't control even a block, because we are waiting on others to define us rather than we define ourselves and move with the mission that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has blessed us with. It's not a curse, it's a blessing to be the follower of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in this day and time, because he's attempting to set us on the top of the world. He wants the world to look at the nation of Islam, the lost and found nation of Islam in the West, and see them and smile. And when we begin to do that, and see, when we begin to acquire, when we begin to move, but what we have to do is first take off the mind of our open enemy. See, Sister talked about it earlier before she had to go. We have to change our mindset. Freedom and the lockdown.
I'm here.
Sister Gidget.
So you made it back. Okay.
We're more locked down in the mind than we are imprisoned, because we have more people who are in mental lockdown than we do who are actually physically incarcerated.
Okay.
Sister, so once we free our mind.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brother Maurice. You go ahead and finish up. I'll get to it.
So once we free our minds, we will then be freed indeed.
All praise due to Allah. Sister Gidget, go ahead, ma'am. I'm sorry you got cut off. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. I've seen the Rolling 60s, the Crips, the Bloods, and all the other gangs take over a territory, so to speak. So we have the capability. In a more positive light, I said it last week on the show I do on Thursday that we don't have to look at the Nation of Islam as a whole. You can go on Facebook and you have people from all walks of life. We have people who have multiple degrees. We have every entity that is important in building a nation. We have a government on our shoulders that we will not take responsibility for. So it's coming into that knowledge of self, but it's actually doing the work. But until we free our minds, until we stop being so comfortable in this chaotic situation that white supremacy has set us in, we're not ever going to come out of this condition. And so that's why I always say, Brother Vernon and Brother Jihad and DJ Black Caesar, you know, I don't care if we're talking to one person or 1,000 people, It's getting the word out there. It's raising our consciousness. It's encouraging people to come together. Let's work side by side. Let's pool our resources. Let's own some stuff, because when you take ownership in something, you value it more. And we have enough dollars to do that. We spend billions of dollars in this country, but we don't invest anything in ourselves, and it really makes no sense. It's hard to get four or five people to come together and pool the resources to work on one little small thing, and that's because we have been pitted against each other for so long. We're divided by skin color. We're divided by hair texture. We're divided by faith, that we have yet to come together. And that's what the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan is out there in the streets doing today. He's embracing all of the indigenous people, and he's embracing, you know, all of our people, regardless of what they believe in or what they don't believe in, and saying, hey, this is the time. If we don't do it now, in the next couple of years, the Hispanic race is going to exceed the black population in America. We're going to be third down or fourth down on the food chain. And until we get something of our own and be able to establish and control our dollars, I just don't know what to say. I don't know what state we're going to be in, but I have faith that we're going to get there. But this is what it takes. We're going to have to go person by person, block by block, state by state, to get the word out there, to raise the consciousness of our people and let them know the true condition that black America is in. Because when you're looking at TV or you're looking out your window, you don't see the politics of what's going on to put us further in the ditch than what we are. But when we start looking at these statistics about how many black men are being killed and how many black men are being in prison, how many black men are not going to college, how is that affecting our economy? How is it affecting our health? We can't afford health care. We're losing our brothers and sisters in the 30s, 40s, and 50 years of age, which is very young. We're not looking at the big picture because we're in our individual shells, but we're going to have to come out of those shells and work together to build a nation.
All praise is due to Allah. You're out on the front line with the fruit of Islam and Sister Gidget Muhammad tonight and Brother Maurice Muhammad. We're talking about Black America on lockdown, the Exodus. This is part three of our series. Let me go down again, because as they were quoting this, he went from talking about separate state and territory, then he goes into talking about point number five, we want freedom for all believers of Islam now held in federal prisons. We want freedom for all black men and women now under death sentence in innumerable prisons in the North as well as the South. Now I understand why it's point number five. See, before, they say confession is good for the soul. See, before, I was just reading this. See, but it began to take root when I kept hearing it every day, over and over and over. Now, the reason why it's number five makes more sense. The first thing you want to do is ask for the separate state and territory, because if you're going to ask for prisoner release, well, the first thing they're going to say, well, what you going to do with them? Where are they going? They ain't coming back here.
Right.
So you got to have somewhere for them to go. But anyway, Brother
right.
Maurice, you want to respond to this point number five real quick, and Sister Gidget?
Well, yes, sir, I would very quickly. You know, that point number five, you know, that federal prison, I remember the minister was telling us, asking the question, how can a person or people who stole a whole group of people be justified in convicting the people that they stole?
Absolutely.
You know, how can they actually have a moral authority to judge those who have not been trained, who have not been taught the knowledge of themselves? And this is why we're killing, robbing, and stealing. Because if you understood who you were robbing from, if you understood when you looked in the mirror, you saw God, how many of us would rob God? How many of us would kill him if we saw him? So these people have not been trained. They have not been taught the knowledge of self. So they are walking around as a savage. So who taught them to be a savage other than one who was savage? So what moral ground? What, you know, point number five is a key point because it's a number of justice.
Right.
And it tells us, you know, down in the South, you know, our people are under death sentences. How people have been, they've been done wrong. They're in so many prisons because simply they didn't know. You'll be surprised at how many men are in jail just because they were the only black man walking on the street and they didn't even have. I remember that was a brother that I met in one of the prisons in Alabama, and when we looked in his file, he didn't even have a warrant in his file for what he was convicted for.
Wow.
He didn't even have an instrument of prosecution. They just put the brother in jail. And he stayed in jail for 27 years until he finished his sentence. And then when he finished his sentence, he didn't even want to go. He didn't want to leave because what did he know? What did he know other than prison?
Right.
You took him at 17. Now he's 45, 50 years old. What does he know? Does he know how to fend for himself? Does he know how to get a job and do very basic things like write a check? Does he know how to open a bank account? Does he know how to go and get his power and his gas turned off? No, none of that. So you've actually made him dependent and institutionalized because what you have done is you've imprisoned his mind. He can't even think outside of the prison wall, even though he's standing outside the prison wall. So he's thinking back to what he knows. So what the messenger is telling us in this, in my opinion, you know, and I'm so glad that he did talk about separating first so that you could have training ground. Because he said, but first, you have to be a believer in Islam before you can be freed. Mm-hmm. You got to be in the class to be taught how to be civilized mm-hmm. in order to even qualify yourself for this process. Because what we don't want to happen is you be released and be a bigger and better fool and a bigger and better tool for our enemy. So we have right. to go into our prisons. We have to begin to even set up programs outside of the prison so that our young people and our older people can see the work that is being done and the work that it takes to keep our young people. It's actually a task to keep young people out of prison now. This is actually a job to keep them out of prison because the whole environment, everything that they're seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, is saying, come this way. And it's pointing toward prison. And it's coming. So you're taking all your soldiers and you're putting them in the infantry of your enemy. That's not a right. very wise person. And so I'm so glad that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has taken the army of Allah to the streets and yeah. said, brother, reclaim your own and be yourself. This is you. I'm you. It's not the suit. It's what's in the suit that makes the suit look good. And the same thing that's in the suit is in your head, in your heart, in your mind. So come on, brother, reclaim your own. Just simply be yourself. You don't have to be what you were. Now, I hope by Allah's grace, I hope none of us are what we were. And I don't think any of us are where we're going to be.
Yeah.
So we just have to continue to strive, continue to move, continue to grow in this great light of Islam. And I'm not saying it from a figurative point of view. I'm saying it from a literal and a verb point of view. Our way of life should be seen among our peers, or, you know, among the people in our community, and we just not be this not be just a profession for us that we just simply professing it with our mouths what is not in our hearts. We really have to now live those epithets that we have been making cliches all of our lives. I want for my brother what I want for myself. You know, your half of the bowl is for my brother. We got to start living that now.
That's right.
Otherwise, we're going to fall into the same rut that other civilizations are falling into.
And so this is how we begin the process of unlocking the mind. If you notice, Brother Jihad, when
Brother Maria?
Echo. Yes, sir?
Okay. Yeah, it broke off a little bit.
Go ahead, Sister Ginta began to echo the same sentiments that I was relaying. Mm-hmm. Not because we taught, because now the spirit of what must be done is in the atmosphere. Those who see it are moving on it. And we're not, and then the minister's not calling for just the Muslims. He's calling now for those with like minds. So those Christian that Brother Gene was talking about, those Christian brothers and sisters who want to help the minister, come on out your churches and help. But you first must be inspired by an action. I remember we went out to one of the housing projects, and that was a church having an outdoor service. And I asked a couple of brothers, just come in and sit down in the service. We didn't say a word, brother. We didn't say a word. We just sat in the service, and we began to, and Allah showed us how the Muslim brothers can change the spirit. And all of a sudden, the sister started speaking with a greater authority, and she started talking about what the black man needed to do. And I thought I was at the mosque. I said, "That's right, sister." And the people began to respond, "That's right, yeah." You know, and it became now a mission statement. We didn't say a word, but what was happening, Allah was showing the sister who was speaking what was in our hearts, and we were speaking, our spirit was speaking through her, and those gods connected. Yeah. The God that was in her and the God that was in us, it connected and began to start the pace and began to be the weight for that community. And after the pastor of the church, he got up. He says, "I don't know who these men are. I never met them before in my life, but God sent them."
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens when that happens over 130 locations at one time, at one hour?
Boots on the ground at one time.
What happens when that happens?
Yeah.
Now, when we get ready to change our atmosphere at one time, in 139 like minds following one great man, following one great drill instructor, we can forward march. We can right bout face. We can right flank. We can left flank. See, it's drill time now.
Yes, brother.
So are we willing to take on the real drill? Not necessarily what we've been hot, hold, pick them up. No, the forward march drill now.
Right.
Now the minister has taken the mark and the time off of us. Now he said, forward march into your community and change it. Change your reality. Because Allah won't change for you what you're scared to change for yourself.
Sister,
so it's time now, brother.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Brother Maurice.
I was just saying it's time now.
Praise be to Allah.
That the real nation of Islam stand up.
That's right. Sister Gidget, now you've been in the prison reform ministry. So I know you can appreciate this. I know you can appreciate this point number five. I know you got something to tell us.
Well, you know, Brother Jihad and Brother Maurice, I've looked at this through the insight that Allah has provided for me to look at it. And there's a root that begins this process. There's a scheme that creates this process. And if we want to go back to education, let's go back to substandard education. Let's go back to how our men are out of the home, how our women are in the home, how our women are raising the young men, how society in itself has turned its back on the black man, the lack of opportunity that is available for the black man is now given to the black woman. Now, this is just the game. This is just the game, you know, because what they have done ever since coming out of the 60s into the 70s, they have elevated the black woman. They have elevated her, told her she was liberated, say, hey, you know, you don't have to be a man to be a CEO. And all of that's fine. You know, get an education, get some letters behind your name, that's fine. But when a woman, because I'm going to show you the power of an MGT, when a woman starts to look at her man as being less than what he is, when she's not looking at him with that godly sense and looking to him and depending on him, it strips away from his own, I can't even think of what it is. I don't want to say ego, his esteem. And so when they started this situation to whereas they started placing women in jobs, and I'm talking about industry jobs, factory jobs, where most of our men were going out and working and they not really hiring the black man, that created a situation. Because if you remember, Brother Jihad, Brother Maurice, I don't know if y'all remember, but I remember, you know, in the 30s and 40s, and I don't remember that time, I'm saying historically as people talk, a lot of the women were in the home. A lot of the men were out working. Now, after the Civil Rights Movement, that kind of turned around. And so they created a situation to where a man who was determined to be a man would do anything he had to do to keep his manhood in his mind. So if he had to kill, rob, and steal to say to himself, hey, I'm a man because I was able to produce this, even though I had to kill and rob and do whatever to do it, I'm still a man. And just to hang on to your manhood, they create a situation that's going to imprison you. That is a game. So now if you don't have no job and you got homeboy on the corner and he wants you to sell for him, then you go out there selling dope just so you can look and feel like a man, but it's a trap to imprison you so they can work your ass to death for nothing. It's slavery all over again. And if they had not implemented the little crap salaries that they said that they paying each inmate, it would be slavery all over again. So they've incorporated these little clauses and policies and procedures to try to make it not slavery, but it is what it is. And most of it is because we as women, and I'm sorry, I'm just going to tell it the way it is, we are raising our sons that way. We are treating our brothers that way. Sisters got to get in this fight to save our black men from going to prison. And you know, this is real talk because this happens. How many of y'all know that when a man loses his job, it is a financial strain? But how does that woman change? And how does her changing affect him? And what does that do to his esteem? So he's going to do one of two things. He's going to either abandon the family, or he's going to go out there and do all the wrong things to keep his status up in the home. And see, we are playing into the game. So here we are, 30, 40 years out of the Civil Rights Movement, and we have more black men locked up today than we ever had. Mm-hmm. It's a game. And until we as women, who are the first educators of man, turn that situation around. When your man loses his job, then take what you got, make it work, encourage him. Help him create a job on his own, whatever you have to do. But do not degrade him, because society is already going to do that. And I'm sorry, that's just how I see it, and I've seen it for years, and I see that this is what happens to our black men. So, you know, there are a lot of other entities that play a fact, but when we got to go home with this. We got to go in the homes with this. The mothers are raising their boys to be inferior because we don't know any other way. We are educating our children. We pay $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 for degrees to teach our children to still be in servitude to other corporations. But how many of us teach our children to get a degree and go out there and start something on your own? What is the point?
Sister Gidget,
of having the education if you are not going to better your community, if you're not going to create a legacy for your future, you creating a legacy for Ford and Chrysler and all these other people who have built legacies for their families for years. We gotta have a different outlook on this now. That's just where I am with that.
I got a question.
And the women got to do their part.
I got a question for you, Sister Gidget, and Brother Maurice. It's going back to point number five. What can we do? Because this here is a qualification, point number five. We want freedom for all believers of Islam now held in federal prisons. We want freedom for all black men and women now under death sentences in innumerable prisons in the North as well as the South. What can we do? How do we take the prison reform ministry and make it fit to qualify to handle a task such as this? Because, first of all, the number one thing I'm seeing here, Brother Maurice pointed it out, they got to be Muslims. Because once you come into the knowledge of yourself, you awaken, you're no longer dead. So that's number one. But now how do we, because see, when a man or a woman goes to prison, their families is affected by this as well. So I know the prison reform, we have brothers that go into the prisons and take the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad under the leadership of Minister Farrakhan, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, into the prisons, so forth and so on. But is that enough? What else can be done to make this a reality, to make this thing? Because let's just say, like the king said to Yaqub, what do you want? And then Yaqub says, well, we want separate state and territory. We want you to fertilize. We want you to give us some fertile, rich land and help us for 20 to 25 years. Now, let's say that happens. Now we're negotiating for the prisoner release. How can we qualify this point number five now? What will it take?
I mean, you have to go state by state. Each law is different. Each conviction is different. I mean, if he's a baby raper, I don't want him to be free. I don't care if he calls himself a Muslim or not. I mean, we have to look at that, and laws vary state to state. But I'm gonna let Brother Maurice talk on that because he knows better than I do. But
Yes, ma'am. Okay, Brother Maurice.
Well, dear brother, one of the very basic things we have to understand is that decision is not going to happen in the prison. So we have to begin now to put people in like minded positions. And our different elected officials in different ways. But the first way we do that is we begin to organize our community around that issue, mobilize our community around that issue, and educate our brothers and sisters. Because, see, whenever you begin to talk about prison reform and rights for prisoners and programs for prisoners, the first thing that the mainstream wants to say is that you're soft on crime. No, we want to eliminate the crime, but because we want to eliminate the crime, not at the wrist, but from the neck down, from the head down.
Right.
You know, we want to eliminate the mindset of criminal activity, not because the reason we get caught up in criminal activity is because we have someone thinking for us.
Okay.
And so one of the ways that we can begin right now is what we're doing is simple. It's very simple. Begin to organize our community. Have forums with people in your community that will be in position to make this happen. Because, see, if we don't make this issue a widespread issue or mainstream issue, then it's just a couple of wild, as people say, or a group of wild-eyed Muslims talking about freeing people out of prison. But if we make it very viable and we make it make sense, we make it for the person who's very analytical, we show them the facts. We show them where we can begin to curb certain programs and then begin to make progress in our community. Then it becomes factual. It becomes an actual help to the community. And see, one of the things they're realizing right now is they simply don't have the money now to put into prisons. So they're privatizing the prisons. when they begin to privatize the prison, if you're building a hotel that's going to have 100% vacancy every night, isn't that a very profitable business for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. Of course it is. And it goes back to the economic point. It goes back to how much are we willing to organize economically. And what I mean by that is beginning to deal with trade schools and skill-based schools, that when these people come, when our brothers and sisters come out of prison, when they come out of correctional institutions, we have something viable for them, because usually they're coming back to a very basic need. So how am I going to feed myself?
Brother Maurice, before you go any further, let's take another call, because we're getting ready to dial it down. I would definitely like the listeners to get online and make a comment or ask a question. Brother,
I'm
going to
step off for
more?
A moment, and I'm going to get right back on there, brother.
Yes, sir. Brother Vernon, do we have a caller? Brother Vernon?
Is he there?
Brother Jihad, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
This is Brother Gene.
Oh, yeah, okay, Brother Gene, go right ahead.
Okay, I just want to comment. I wanted to ask Brother Maurice, and I'll forward the question to Sister Gidget, is that the work that you, brother and sister, are doing with the prison reform ministry, how receptive is that in the juvenile system? That's my first question. Is that receptive in the juvenile system? And secondly, you couldn't find the word that when it strips a brother of his, you said ego, and you couldn't find the word for it. But I recall a teaching that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and I'm going to quote his words, he said, when you strip a brother of that, you strip him of his nature, and his nature is of God, because in his nature is the power and to rule and have dominion over all things. So when a brother is not exercising power in his home, and what the enemy has done has really stripped him of his nature of God. But I really wanted to pose the question is that, you know, I know that Brother Maurice is in the prison reform ministry and they're doing an excellent job. But another thing is the juvenile system receptive to that? And third, we have to start going and holding these politicians, these preachers, these pastors, we have to raise the level of consciousness in their mind, because they are misleading the people. And if we raise the consciousness level in their minds that what they're doing and raise their conscience, because it's going to spark something down in their soul when we let them know and be bold and tell them, look, you're misleading the people and keeping our people in slavery. Either you stand up or sit down. And I think that's something that we have to do as Muslims. But I want to say this, and I'm a close. We have got a lot of work ahead of us. It is written that we won't be in bondage forever. Satan, he gonna have to submit. He gonna have to bow down and give us what we asked for. But we have to mobilize and strategize and continue the work. Because I'm a living witness, and I'm a comment on Brother Maurice. He said, not only have we got to plant the seed, we have to be an example of what the teachings has done for us, our moral standards, our living standards. And we just have to live by that and be an example to our people. They're watching. Trust me. They're watching. So we're representing the God and his Christ, and we have to do it in the utmost manner and commit to it and live it every single day of our lives.
Yes, sir. Well, Brother Dean, I wanted to answer your question as far as implementing Islam into the juvenile system. I can't speak for Alabama, but in Texas, we are not allowed to implement any kind of religious aspects at the juvenile detention center because of the law that says that, you know, children
are not responsible. And so we really, you know, you would have to get permission from the parents. So they just really don't have that. They have a basic prison chaplain that may go in if you request as a parent that your child has a Quran or a final call or something like that. It's a whole process just to get that literature into them in the juvenile, in the juvenile system. And thank you for giving me that word, nature, brother, because that's exactly right. And when you said that, I thought about when I was speaking of how we had to undo what Willie Lynch did, and that was one of the first things he said in his letter, that you have to strip him of his nature, and his nature is to provide and protect, you know, his family. So you're exactly right, and you know, that's what we have to do. But unfortunately, in the state of Texas, no. We cannot implement any teachings of any religious sort in our juvenile detention centers. But being a mother of two young boys, when my husband and I divorced, you know, them already being in the mosque, you know, just because he was out of the house and out of the mosque, that didn't stop anything. You know, I always kept them around the fruit. I always kept them around positive men. And so, you know, the men in the community have to step up, because we have so many children who do not have fathers. Their fathers are deceased. Their fathers are in prison for life. Their fathers are just not around. So what happens to that young man who is absent of a father? Does he just do without? So sometimes, you know, we can't just wait on the mothers to bring them to us. Sometimes we have to implement mentoring programs in an environment that is safe, in an environment that the parent feels comfortable in bringing their child to be around the fruit and other positive men, and, you know, so they can be properly influenced. The other thing you mentioned, as far as the politicians are concerned, I don't know if you had the opportunity to listen to the show last week. I did a show called The Politics of Politics, Minister Robert Muhammad,
excellent,
who is very
show.
Abreast in politics.
Excellent show.
He had told me once before, he said that our politicians do not service us because we as a people, we don't ask for anything. We don't have a black agenda. But the Muslim program is the black agenda that needs to be presented to Congress in legislative form. Mm. So until, brother, we stop giving away our votes, until we start participating in the political process, and what I mean by that is that when those councilmen and you know, mayors and state representatives come to our neighborhood and shake our hands and kiss our babies and we don't see them anymore, we have to start calling for those town hall meetings and saying, hey, we have an agenda in this district or community, whatever part they're representing. We have an agenda. This is the agenda. What are you going to do? And you're going to have to be supportive of them if you think, if you believe, if they have convinced you that they're going to go into that particular office and represent you. And if they do not, you have to stand as a unit in your community, in your district, and hold them accountable. But we don't want to do the work of involving ourselves in the political process, because we think when we vote that it's over. It's not. We expecting them to do something and they don't do it, what we do? We just say, you know, we say what we have to say. We're disappointed, and sometimes we'll go back and vote them back in again because, oh, we just don't like the other guy that's running against them. And we've had 3, 4, 5 years of them not doing anything for us either. We have to develop a black agenda in our communities. When these people come out here asking you for their vote, ask them what are they going to do for you. But if we don't have a group of people that are standing strong, saying and demanding that certain things be done, we're just giving away our vote.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Brother Maurice, are you there? Oh, brother's not back yet. Does that answer your question, Brother Gene?
Yes, sir. Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome, sir. Thank you.
All praise is due to
Lord. Brother Maurice is back in now.
Oh, Brother Maurice is back in now? Brother Maurice?
His mic is open.
His mic is open, but he's not back on the line. Well, we're going to move right along because we got about 10 minutes or 15 minutes, and then we got to go ahead and wrap it up. But I just want to say this has been very informative for me tonight, and I thank you so much, Sister Gidget. For being on the line tonight. I have heard from Brother Student Prison Reform Minister James Muhammad from Alabama, and everything is going okay with his mom at the hospital.
Oh, praise
be
to Allah.
He did inform us that she will need surgery, and we pray for her and his family.
Yes.
That his mother regains her strength and gets her health back. So praise be to Allah, Brother James. We're here for you, soldier.
And we love you.
Yes, no doubt. And so I'm going to go ahead. Sister Gidget, so it's a big responsibility, the prison reform ministry. I personally would like to see more things added to it. I don't think that it's just enough to have, me personally, this is just Brother Jihad talking, just to have a prison reform minister going into prison and giving the teachings. That's all well and fine, and that's the basis of it all right there. But I would like to see more things added to it. I would like to see lawyers get involved, you know, to have a lawyer on the team with the prison reform minister, because brother said something earlier, Brother Maurice, about how there's a brother sitting up in prison just from walking the street, being in the wrong place at the wrong time, and they picked him up and gave him the charge. And now he's sitting up in there for 25 years, and then when you open up the gates, he don't even want to go because he don't know nothing else.
See, well, you know, I know exactly what he's talking about.
I would like to see more lawyers, you know, become activists and stop just being for the buck, you know, and get more involved, because a lot of times a lot of this stuff can be avoided if we had lawyers that can go in there and represent our brothers and give them some good representation. A lot of them probably wouldn't even be in there. They're in there because they couldn't afford a lawyer.
That's right.
Well, and you know, we're not educated to that aspect of the law. You know, we tell our children,
absolutely,
you know, don't steal, don't rob, don't kill,
absolutely,
don't rape, don't commit criminal mischief. We don't tell them what could happen to them. We tell them, if you do this, you're going to jail. But what does that mean? What does
right.
going to jail mean?
You know what, Sister Gidget? When you got a good lawyer and you can go down to that jail and tell them, why is my son being charged? Let me go get Johnny. Johnny who, ma'am? Johnny Cochran. See, you'd be surprised how fast folks will straighten up.
Right, but I'm saying there are so many people who are not abreast to the law. Now, I'm going to tell you, I have a brother who was locked up in 1969. He was 16 years old. They charged him with double homicide. He got into an altercation with a young boy who was tending the gas station that his father owned. Something happened. The boy ended up being stabbed and died. The father, who was not there at the time, came in, saw his son had been stabbed and died, and the father had a massive heart attack and died. And they charged my brother with double homicide at the age of 16. That was in 1969. My brother was released from prison in 2008. Mm-hmm. So.
You've been there.
Wow.
You've been there.
So the thing about it was that even at that time, there are certain situations where he said there was an altercation. He said there was an altercation. You know, he had given the boy something. The boy was supposed to give it back. The boy didn't want to give it back. They started fighting. And you know, somebody pulled a knife, whoever did it, and this is what happened. It wasn't like he went there and robbed the place or anything of that nature. It was an altercation between two people. But he was charged with double homicide. And what I'm saying to you is that, you know, when we're teaching our children, Brother Jihad, we're teaching them the very, very basics. But when we talk about going to jail, we don't even research ourselves of what the laws of our state is.
Mm-hmm.
What is, you know, due process of the law? What is it? What if my son or daughter is charged with this, this, that, and the other? You know, a lot of times, oftentimes, more than not, they are scared up when they're arrested. You know, even you could be a first-time offender, and the cop can come in there and say, hey, you know what? We're going to give you 60 years. You need to tell us what happened. And what they end up doing, they end up copping a plea. So when the officer reads you your Miranda rights and says you have a right to remain silent, that's the first thing they should tell you. You have the right to remain silent. That's what you need to do. And that's what we need to tell our children and anybody else that don't know. You have the right to remain silent. That means shut up until somebody that knows what's going on can get there and speak on your behalf. But they are so intimidated by law enforcement. But by the time the lawyer gets there, they done did a whole darn confession. So now, excuse me, recanting what you may have said because you were so afraid becomes an issue.
Yes, right.
It becomes an issue because if you say, well, look, man, I know you found 40 kilos of dope in my car, but, hey, man, that ain't mine. what they going to say, well, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law. It's in your car. You just don't know the process. And if you don't know the process, the first thing you teach your children is when they read you your Miranda rights, take the first one. You have the right to remain silent because oftentimes, I'm going to say 85% of the black population, especially on drug convictions, are convicted because they copped the plea.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's sad because they don't know the due process of the law. I've seen where they busted guys and they found dope on the ground and they go give it to you.
Right.
And like my father used to say, a police officer, one of the first black police officers in Houston that did over 40 years of service, and he said that back in that day that if it was no case, they would make a case.
Right. That's right. Sister Gidget, we gotta cut it because I want to hear from Brother Maurice. We're getting ready to shut the line down in a few minutes, and I want to.
Okay, before Brother Maurice go on,
yes,
I'm going to let him close out. I want to make one announcement because I don't know what my phone is going to do.
Yes, ma'am.
My show is on Thursday.
Oh, you know I was going to hook
at
you up, sis. Come on, now.
Well, no. This is a special announcement. In the process of atonement,
right.
You know that the minister is going to be speaking in Charlotte this weekend. So in remembrance of the Million Man March, what we're going to do on Thursday, we're going to talk about the remembrance of the Million Man March. We're going to talk about how nation building is implementing those committees,
yeah,
and how we're actually going to have action committees, and I do mean action committees
That's what we're going to start on this 17th anniversary of the Million Man March.
Right.
On behalf of Nation Building, we're going to implement those action committees. And also, we're going to play the pledge that was given by Minister Farrakhan on that day. So all my brothers out there who are in listening distance, Brother Maurice, I want you to come back. The pledge is 5 minutes and 5 seconds long. So if you call in a quarter till, 10 minutes till, before the show ends at 10 o'clock Central Time, just call in 10 minutes till so you can participate in the retaking of the pledge. That's what I wanted to say.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you so much, Sister Gidget. We gonna, you know I'll be there.
Brother Maurice. Oh, yeah. You don't have no choice.
Sir.
Everybody in the NV Network family does not have a choice. You got to be there front and center. That's in order.
Praise
Maurice.
Yes, sir.
Brother
Can
Maurice,
you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Oh,
I just wanted to get a closing statement from you for tonight, brother. We
yes,
want
sir.
To close out on this segment. We just want to thank you, brother, for coming out. And,
thank you for having
and,
me
and
here, brother.
Really, brother, you've given us a lot of information about the law and something to consider, things that we need to watch out for. This 13th Amendment, there's a lot of information given on that, and I would like to encourage everybody to go back up in the archives and play this broadcast over again, because there's a lot of stuff that you didn't get. You think you got it, but you didn't get it. When you go back and play it over again, you'll hear some things that you didn't hear before. A lot of information was given on this line on all three of the series of Black America on Lockdown, and Brother Maurice was here for all of it. So he's a magistrate court justice, and he's a very valuable man to the Nation of Islam and to Black America and to the state of Alabama as well. And I'm
honored. And to the Nation Building family.
And I'm honored that you would cut her mic, brother. I'm honored that you would I'm honored that you would take the time, Brother Maurice. But go right ahead, brother, and give us a few words in your own words. You got about 5 minutes to say about 4 minutes to go ahead and say something, brother, on behalf of what we dealt with tonight.
Yes, sir. Praise be to Allah. Dear Brother Jihad, I want to definitely thank you and your crew and your staff for having me on. And I'm always honored, and it's a privilege. And it is really a duty for those of us who have been trained in certain areas to bring information back to all of our people. And don't be afraid to share the information. But I'm thankful to the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad for just asking us to go and endeavor into different fields. And I'm thankful to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for embracing us and allowing us to serve. But, dear brother, one of the things that I wanted to bring forward is, you know, we talked about it. I heard Sister Gidget talking about an agenda. And one of the most powerful publications that we've ever produced was a little red book called The National Agenda. And it talks about analytical instructions and systematic instructions from 2000 to 2008. Please get that book. Go into that book and really go and deal with those topics. It's over 105 topics that we can deal with, because we have to get busy right now. Because everything that we have talked about, I heard Sister Gidget talking about Miranda rights and Mirandizing and how cases are made and won and pleas are copped, because oftentimes, dear sister, we know we don't have the resources that the state and what makes it so bad is we end up as taxpayers paying for our own demise in most cases, because we give them the tax monies to go and prosecute our brothers maliciously and most times fraudulently, and simply don't have the voice. And as Brother Jihad talked about, a plea to the attorneys to just please, you know, at a certain point, I know Tom Mesereau, he does 5 or 6 pro bono cases every year. If we could ask our black attorneys to just do maybe 1 or 2 pro bono cases every year, just one or two, you'll be surprised at how many young lives that we can actually save. But as Muslims, as our brothers and sisters, and I'm talking to those members, the registered members of the NOI, what we have to do is we have to get more involved with the day-to-day operations of what happens in our community. We can no longer sit back and watch events happen and we not be a part of them. See, the politics of politics is all about influencing people. And if they see us with 500 and 600 and 700 people coming out to our events that we're putting on, then they say, uh-oh, these people have a voice, and we have to listen to what they say. But if 8 or 9 people come out, they're not taking us very serious. So, brothers and sisters, we have to be about our Father's business at this point. We have to be. There was another book that I want to refer to, and that is The Secret Relations Between Blacks and Jews, the second version, the Red Book. And it talks a lot about prison and incarcerating. And a lot of what we have talked about today on an economic sense will make more sense if you go into that book. You'll see how things were orchestrated based on economics. So when we're talking about our young men making an average salary is $45,000 a year, and then it takes an average of about $24,000 to incarcerate a young man or a young woman, then you're saying you would rather put money, $24,000, into incarcerating than $45,000 into building a family. What they are doing, what the masses of white America and this white supremacy America is doing is investing in its future. So now we have to take time to invest in ours. May
Thank
Allah
you,
bless
brother.
You and keep you, dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. And that's our show for tonight, brothers and sisters. I want to thank everybody for coming on the line. Sister Gidget Muhammad, don't forget to see her, be on her show. That'll be this Thursday at 8 o'clock Central Time. We want to thank Magistrate Court Justice Brother Maurice Muhammad for being out with us tonight. And also, every morning, I make it my business to get on the Final Call prayer line. That number is 760-569-7676. Code is 906-378-POUND. That's 760-569-7676. Code, access code is 906-378-POUND. To all the soldiers out there, boots on the ground this Saturday. Where? The place? Charlotte, North Carolina. We are marching up to be with our reminder, leader, teacher, and guide, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, as he addresses the Day of Atonement. The place? October 14th. Doors open at Bojangles Coliseum. You don't want to miss this. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan puts Muhammad's economic blueprint, ending poverty and want, before the American people. Boots on the ground in Alabama, soldiers, let's get ready to march up into North Carolina, Washington, D.C., New York City, Newark, New Jersey. Boots on the ground, let's get them suits tight. Blouse up them boots, brother, shine them up. Get that white shirt crisp, get them bow ties ready. We marching up into Charlotte, North Carolina. We ain't taking no prisoners. We going out there, we going to save our people. We going to go door to door, and we going to go here and defend and protect our leader, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Don't forget, brothers and sisters, this Sunday, coming up, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan at the Holy Day of Atonement. The doors open at 12 p.m. Program starts at 2. If you can't get there, go to NOI.org and check it out for yourself. Love you, everyone. This has been Out on the Front Line with the Fruit of Islam. I'm Jihad Muhammad. May Allah bless us all. See you all in Charlotte. Allahu Akbar. As-salamu alaykum.
beneficent, the merciful. What is a fruit? A fruit is the best. He is constantly training and conditioning himself to meet and overcome all obstacles in his path. His sole purpose is to help to deliver the 17 million or more dead to the Lamb of God, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, through the honorable minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad. To do this, he is compelled to be obedient, tolerant, militant, courteous, humble, honest, dependable. A fruit is obedient to the laws of Islam and those in authority. His conduct is militant. He is humble and submissive. He is tolerant and understanding. He is courteous and respectful. He is honest in thoughts, deeds, and actions. He is alert and dependable.